Welcome to the Hedge Shepherd Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Ferguson, CEO at NextGen Agri International, where we help livestock managers to get the best out of their stock. I want to take this opportunity to thank our friends at MSD Animal Health and Allflex for sponsoring Hedge Shepherd again this season. And I'm also excited to introduce our mates at Heinegger as brand new sponsors of the show. MSD and Allflex, or perhaps better known as Cooper's Animal Health in Australia, offer one of New Zealand and Australia's largest livestock product portfolios with a comprehensive suite of animal health and management products connected through identification, traceability, and monitoring solutions. Like us, they see how the wealth and breadth of information born out of this podcast can help them and their farming clients achieve their mission of the science of healthier animals. Heinegger will need a little introduction to our audience, a market leader and one-stop shop for wool harvesting and animal fibre removal, together with an expanding range of agricultural products and inputs. The Heinegger name is synonymous with quality, reliability and precision. The Heinegger team have a deep understanding of livestock agriculture, backed by Swiss engineering and a family business dedicated to manufacturing the best. It's fantastic to have both of these sponsors supporting us in bringing Hedge Shepherd to you each week. And now it's time to get on with this week's episode.
Welcome back to Hedge Shepherd. Our resident sheep nerd, Sophie, has found some more research. What have you found, Sophie?
Yeah, well, it's surprisingly not actually on sheep this week. I've ventured into the world of cattle. Well, no, I'll start off. I was looking into mob grazing behaviours of sheep, and I went down the rabbit hole and came across this paper discussing trough water versus pond water and, yeah, the difference in production, growth, etc., on cattle raised on a trough water versus pond. And one of the main things that stood out to me was that the trough steers had a 29% higher ADG than pond steers, which I think is a huge, you know, a huge amount of difference. And there was also differences in ruminating time, grazing, walking, and other behavior, essentially saying that fresh trough water is better for cattle. And obviously we all know that, but to put the numbers behind it, such as the 29%, yeah, really blew my mind. And it just shows how quickly the likes of, you know, putting troughs in can pay for themselves. You know, we were talking last week in the podcast about the 1% differences you can do, and I'm live with Bill Malcolm about the small, and Ken Solly about the small things that you can do. And yeah, 29% higher ADG is kind of hard to ignore.
That's a big number. And I guess the relevant thing there is it's probably not how you supply clean water, but you just got to get clean water there. So, I mean, I know in lamb feedlotting it's massive, and cattle as well, but if, like, how frequently you clean your troughs is really important for lamb growth rates and for cattle growth rates. So it's the same story. If it's clean, fresh water, then they'll more readily consume it and more of it and therefore grow better. So, yeah, it makes a bit of sense, but it's good to put some numbers around it. And obviously in that case, the ponds or dams were less clean than what the trough water was. I mean, there would be situations maybe where the opposite is true. If you've got a crappy trough system that hasn't been cleaned and you've got a nice running stream or something, I guess that's probably opposite is true. But, yeah, so I guess just reiterating the importance of clean water, really.
Yeah, and also in this paper, it said that dairy cattle can trace fecal matter in their water to 0.001%. So that, you know, we think livestock aren't sensitive to that kind of thing, but they really are.
Yeah, no, they're smarter than we think half the time. This week on the show, we had a really great chat with Darren Spencer. He's the president of the Western Australian Shearing Industry Association and a shearing contractor in his own right. Valerie Pretzel, who's executive officer of that group, was meant to join us, but unfortunately COVID struck again, and so we didn't get Valerie along. But a really great chat with Darren Spencer. Thanks to Heinegger for setting up that chat. It was Dale Harris there at Heinegger that suggested we have a chat with Darren, and it was really great to hear the good work that they're doing now, collaborating with AWI to, I guess, get safety first and foremost in shearing shed design and modification. We really had a good chat about that, what sometimes can be a bit of tension between the farmer and the shearer, but Darren's approach is awesome to making sure people are getting the right, doing shed audits, getting the right gear in there so that the shearers can perform at their best, and that obviously safe working environment contributes positively to the whole industry. So, yeah, I really enjoyed, I guess, learning more about from the contractor side of the business and the shearer side of the business, and I'm sure people out there are going to enjoy this chat with Darren Spencer from WA WASIA, Western Australian Shearing Industry Association.
Welcome, Darren Spencer, to Head Shepherd.
Thanks, Mark.
Darren, great to have you along. We have two sides in the industry, in the shearing industry, so I should introduce you properly. Sorry, you're a president there of the Western Australian Shearing Industry Association and a shearing contractor as well. I think before we get right into it, we might just, I guess, get you to explain what WASIA does and sort of whereabouts you are in the world, and then we'll go from there.
All right. So WASIA was formed as a group to give shearing contractors a voice in WA and to represent WA shearing contractors. There was always Shearing Contractors Association of Australia, but it was felt over here that things were a lot different and our circumstances were different. So there was a group set up, WA Shearing Contractors Association, in 1987, and that worked along until I probably couldn't get my years right, about 2012, when we decided, with dwindling numbers of contractors in WA, that we would open it to an industry association to let TAFEs and grower groups become members of our association so that we had a stronger voice. And as an association, we give information to our members with rates and any changes in the industry. We lobby Parliament a little, not a lot, but we do lobby them a little for funding and for things like workers' compensation and payroll tax that we've lobbied them with over the years. Also, part of it was when it was WA Shearing Contractors Association, they lobbied for a separate award. So Western Australia is quite unique in that two awards cover Western Australia, so anyone that is just a partnership or a private enterprise is covered by the Western Australian Shearing Industry Award, and those that are PTY limited companies and trusts are covered by the Federal Pastoral Award. And then we throw another complex one into it where we have a third setup where in 2012, when the Federal Pastoral Award roped everyone in, we set up enterprise agreements in WA, so there's quite a number of contractors, myself included, in Western Australia who operate under enterprise agreements. So, and our enterprise agreements mostly mirror the Western Australian Award, which enables contractors to work weekends and stuff without penalty rates. So, but otherwise pretty much mirrors the Pastoral Award.
Excellent. So your contracting run is based around Lake Grace, or do you go all over WA?
Mostly Lake Grace these days. We used to do a bit of station country work. We used to go out Leonora and up out west of Meekatharra stuff, but these days it's based pretty much around Lake Grace, Lake King, Newdigate and Kalgarran. So sort of a basis from about 100 k's from home.
Yeah, right. Some small sheep out that way, just sort of 80, 90 kilo ewes. And...
Yeah. Yeah, some huge sheep actually when you get into some of them. I always find it interesting that I've got a grower out the road here who he decided he was going to get another contractor, and so he got a contractor in from Boy at Brook, and I'm quite good friends with the farmer. And anyway, I went out there the first year, the guys from Boy at Brook turned up, and the farmer said to me, I was talking to him before I went to the shed, and he was telling me, Darren, these blokes, they can't believe the size of these sheep. They've never seen sheep so big in their life. But anyway, quite a lot of big Collinsville. And when I first started shearing, I started shearing at Lake King. I grew up at Lake King, which is another 100-odd k's east of here. And there's a lot of bungarees around out there and big bungaree weathers. And so you learn how to shear big sheep and you learn how to shear weathers. So,
yeah, that's... Shearing a bungaree weather would be stuff nightmares of Adolf, I think, out there.
Yeah. Well, at least we learned how to shear them, and that's a good thing. Yeah. It pays nowadays if you've got to shear big sheep.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Our friends at Heinegger were keen for us to get you on, but also it's great to have a chat anyway. But we've been through, well, you've seen it all, but the last 4 or 5 years anyway, where, like we talked about, I feel like shearer shortage was talked about for decades, but it really came home to roost sort of with whether it was caused by COVID or sort of finally the last nail in the coffin was COVID, but obviously it got very, very difficult to find shearers, and I'll get you to comment on that. But also, I guess the discussion I'm keen to have is where you deal with farmers, and they sort of say that sometimes they get some sloppy sort of shearing jobs done, and then we also hear from shearers that farmers sometimes don't provide the necessary working conditions to for them to do their job safely and effectively. So, yeah, I guess, I mean, the point of the discussion really is it's as a farming industry, we need to set ourselves up for success by having good facilities, and then we can kind of expect a good job to be done from the shearing side, contractor side.
Yeah, so on the side where we found ourselves really short of staff, I think it was a track we were going down with getting new entrants into the industry, in that I think we were concentrating with a lot of our training on training people that are already in industry. And the thought was there that we didn't need to train so many new people. We had plenty of people there, and that all we needed to do was get them up to speed more. And so a lot of money was spent on training people in the industry in shed, and trying to, you know, the thought was if we can pick them up 10 to 20 sheep a day, we would still cover it. And I think that's where we went wrong. And COVID came, we didn't have a lot of new entrants, new Australian entrants into the industry, and we were relying very heavily on the New Zealanders, as well as people coming in out of the UK and elsewhere around the world. And so when COVID hit, we really struggled, and so that meant we had to actually do some training. And so through AWI, there was a lot of more emphasis put on training new entrants and novices. And so, you know, really for the first time ever, really, you could see guys go to a shearing school, learn how to shear, and they could come out shearing 50 or 60 a day, and they could jump on a stand because there was stands empty. And so, and now we're working through that. So where we trained so many people through that period, and South Australia and Victoria have trained colossal amounts of people. We've trained a lot in WA. And so now I think we're at a stage where we've got a lot of improver shearers, and they're at the 100 to 120, and some a lot more than where they shear. And so now we're changing a bit of the emphasis onto improver shearers. And so I think we're doing pretty well that way as far as industry goes. So on the shoulders of the peaks, we've got enough shearers pretty much. We can find shearers in the peaks. It's always been that you can't find enough shearers because all of a sudden every farmer wants to shear in September or whenever.
And
now in the last year or so, everyone's struggled for shed staff. So we've put so much emphasis onto shearers, and that those people that went to shearing school, it didn't matter that they got shown how to shed hand at shearing school and wool press, but they could get on a stand, and that's what they wanted to do. So we missed out that bit in the middle where we didn't put them into sheds as a learner shearer, that they had to browse about the press until they got there. So over the last 12 months or so, especially here in WA, we've put an emphasis on training shed staff, and whether that be going around to schools, which we've done, and I've done here in Lake Grace. You know, we went to the high school and said, is there any kids that want to learn how to rouse about so they can come out in school holidays and all that? And so we ran two workshops in November. We did a two-day workshop with the year 10-11s, and we did a two-day workshop with the year 9s. We had 9 kids that came out and spent 2 days to learn how. And, you know, those kids now want to come and work for us during school holidays. And Mark and Sarah Buscombe at Boddington have done this a lot, and they started doing it. And, you know, they've got a lot of kids that go away to boarding school in Perth, the farmers' daughters and whatnot. And they're all going shed handing every spare minute because they see the money they're getting. You know, they're earning $40 an hour. And 17-year-olds earning $40 an hour, is, you know, they don't ask them their money. They've got their own. So I think as far as the training and getting over the shortage of people, I think we're doing quite well now. And I do know that Victoria and South Australia, where they've got a really good program over there, and they've got a lot of state government money into it, they're doing really well. So it's we're coming along Australia-wide through AWI. We've set up wool tags, which is, you know, a training set up. So where we meet, so we've got state wool tags and we've got a national wool tag, and we're following each other. And in the national wool tag, we go back from there to our state base and with ideas about more training and how we can get people into it. And, yeah, it's going really well.
Tag standing for trainer advisory group or something? Or?
Yeah, wool trainer advisory group. So, cool. Yeah, so that's going really well. So I can see some good positives coming for us for finding people and hopefully the right people. So if we can have enough people, those people that can't shear sheep to a standard, we'll find out they've either got to pick up or ship on because they're not going to get a job, which is the way it used to be. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the other initiatives that you're heavily involved with is the, I can't work out whether it's Safe Sheds or Shed Safe, but it seems to be depending on which website I'm reading. But
Safe Sheds,
and that's obviously a collaboration with AWI. Yeah, I guess what are the key parts of that booklet, or I guess when you can send a crew out to a job, what's the sort of best scenario that you look for when you're in terms of what that shed setup is.
So a little, do you want a little bit of history on that?
Yeah, that'd be good.
So some of the history on that was back in about 2006, 2007 or 2005, 6 and 7, when we were WA Shearing Contracts Association, our association went to the WorkSafe Commissioner and he gave our association $25,000 a year to go out and do shed inspections, to pick up the standard of sheds because, you know, we go into sheds without toilets, without running water, you know, with broken steps and all that sort of stuff. So for 3 years we ran that program, and when we finished that program you could see a, you know, a real standard lift in the sheds around the place. And some of that was run in conjunction, well, at the same time as Elders and Nutrien and those guys were running wool things like clip to cloth and all those sort of things that they ran back then. So that ran for about 3 years and then the funding stopped and we never got any more funding. So in 2017, so we talked about it through our association stuff about trying to get it all running again. In 2017, Joe Hall from Wool Producers Australia rang me and said, Darren, can you sort out something with your association, AWI, to get the program up and running again? So at that time we had a new executive officer in Valerie Pretzel, and she brought with her a lot of wealth of experience in marketing and computer technology and all that sort of stuff. So we set about trying to get this program up and running again and applied to AWI for funding. And also went to CGU Insurance in WA because they did a lot of workers' comp insurance. So we went to them and applied for some funding. So we got about, I think AWI gave us $50,000 and CGU gave us $20,000 to develop the program. So over the next few years, we developed the program and also developed an app with it that, you know, you can go into a shed. So the program is set up with four parts to it. So you have an induction, a pre-shearing, a post-shearing, and a main full inspection program. So that was all set up so that we could go to a shed as a contractor, and preferably we'd go out there before shearing, well before shearing, and run through the program with the farmer and leave him with a list or whatever that needed to be fixed, and could discuss with him priorities about it, you know, what really needed to happen first. Because as a shearing contractor, I could walk into a shed and there'd be a gate hanging off a catching pen that had been like it the year before. And if your workers walk in and see that, they're down in the dumps already. You know, yeah. What do we come back to? Whether you want to wipe it off, come back to this shithole for, because nobody cares. But the rubbish bins are still full and overflowing and things like that, and broken boards, broken steps. So we set about to make it that you know, there was a conduit between the shearers and the grower. And CGU came on board because they could see that if the program got up and got going properly, there'd be less injuries in the sheds. So that's where all that was born out of. So it was a lot of industry consultation to develop the program through, not just in WA. We consulted with trainers and people in the eastern states as well, and shearing contractors and people that had worked a lot in the industry that had a fair idea. And really, I probably need to take my hat off to Valerie and Henry Ridge, who did a lot of the legwork with this in actually putting together. You know, blokes like myself, we consulted and stuff, and I had a fair bit of input with it. But they done all the legwork and nudged it out and developed the program. And then Valerie, through one of our members, got in touch with iAuditor, because one of our members had a mate that's in the mining industry, and his blokes use iAuditor a lot for checking things out. So Valerie talked to iAuditor, and we've actually got this program set up that where we can still change stuff in the program. So they have lists and lists and lists of checklists, but this is our own. And so if things need to be changed around, we can go in and change it, and we can collect the data from it. So the data goes back to a central base, and we can see what the biggest problems are, so where the most failures are when you go through the program. It'll show up that these points need to be looked at and run an advertising campaign to try and get those main things fixed up.
So in terms of how, like, who the user of that's shearing contractors, are you a sort of core user of iAuditor for, is it any farmer can grab it and use it, or?
So with the Shed Safe program, it's just a matter of logging into the right place. Anyone can use it. It's there. Yeah. It's free to use.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, iAuditor does have shearing shed checklists,
yeah,
but this is specific for our industry and what we see we need through it. And so that's why it works really well. So,
and it's so the iAuditor, the app itself, is a pay as you go sort of thing, or it's free as well?
It's free.
Oh, right. So, no real excuses then.
Yeah, well, that's it. So, for me, I think you can use for up to 10, I could use it for up to 10 clients or something before I have to pay. So, what I do is do it on their login.
Yeah.
And so, So the thing is that when we go through the shed and they can download it, they've got it all there on their laptop or their iPad or whatever they've done it on,
yeah,
and then they can log it in and go back and check through their list. And, or, you know, if something happens in the shed out of the ordinary, they can, and, you know, WorkSafe come in and say, well, you know, this and this has happened. Show us where you've done some work in your shed. And so they can then, you know, go back to their program and say, well, this is what we've done, and we went through it, and these were the how we could rectify things and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. What I like about the concept is that it's not some government telling you to do something. It's the industry sort of helping itself, and, yeah, it's sounds fantastic because essentially that's what needs to happen. You can't – people coming in from the outside telling you how to run a shearing team is not going to work. So,
An interesting observation that Valerie made, because back in 2022, Valerie and I went to Esperance, AWI funded. We went down to a field day down there in the March, and we did a shed inspection on the shed where they were holding, the A-Sheet group were holding a field day there, autumn field day. So we done a shed inspection and sort of ran through it with them at their field day. And they invited us back. We got some really good traction out of it. So in the July, Valerie and I went down there and we done 5 days, and we done 21 sheds in the 5 days. We went and inspected them, and we done them with the growers and all that. And, it was really interesting. Because Valerie doesn't come from a shearing shed background, and we'd go into a shed and where the wife had organised us to come and do it, because she was the one laying in bed at night wondering who was going to jail when they had an accident. And so we'd walk into a shearing shed and she'd be trying to set up the farmer's wife on the iPad if they were having trouble. And she said it was just a classic one, Chef. We walked into and the farmer was standing there with his arms folded, looking at us to say, you know, who are you? What are you? And she said, I just walked in there and just started talking to the farmer about, oh, you know, how does it run and all this sort of stuff and about his farm and stuff. And she said by the time we finished, he was eating out of my hand, you know, I could have told him anything. But she said it was just the fact that, you know, someone with knowledge had come in there and could just talk to him and stuff like that. So it relaxed him. And then farmers worked really well with us. We had a huge response from that, and we've already got people that want us to go back, and we've got other areas where we, you know, we've gone and done shed inspections.
So yeah, practical people like to talk to practical people. That's about it too.
And, you know, it's for benefit of industry, and, you know, that's why we're doing it. It's for our industry.
Yeah. And what I should have said, we're missing Valerie today, Valerie Pretzel, who's the executive officer there at WA Sheep Shearers Industry Association. She's actually just gone down with COVID, so it's she's a bit of casualty for today because we were keen to have both of you along, but it's great we can get it recorded anyway. But she's obviously been a powerhouse of the association there for a while.
Yeah, very, very good for our association. And, her expertise in what she does has worked really well for us.
Excellent. We can't obviously get away from the fact that shearing is one of the toughest jobs going around. You'll know the stats, but there's very few occupations that are physically more demanding than shearing, but it's still got a romantic attachment to it. There's still people love doing it and love getting on a handpiece I can always say if you want to run a field day, just put some shearers shearing somewhere and farmers will all turn up because everyone loves to watch a good shearer. It's amazing process to watch. I'm very hopeless at it. Luckily, my brother chose to be a good shearer, so I didn't have to. But yeah, it is a unbelievably physically demanding job.
Well, what did they say? A shearer runs a marathon, four marathons a day, for 2 hour periods. And that was one thing we found when we got all those learners coming out of shearing school, that their bodies couldn't cope with it because of the physicality, and, you know, you've got to train your body. And that's where if they start off as a shed hand and then a presser and then come, their bodies are conditioned for that sort of work and that period. And that's where a lot of people struggle. They think they can come and shear. I know myself, after not shearing a sheep for 4 or 5 years, that I go back and start doing a few days here and there. You have a lot of different places that you know that are very sore.
Yeah.
It's like riding a bike, you never forget. You know, you can go out there and cheer away. And I actually enjoy it. I could probably, if I hadn't gone off contracting doing other things, I could probably be still cheering and enjoying it because, I don't know, it's something about working with a group of people all the time and meeting lots of different people and, just the camaraderie of the industry. It's it has changed a lot over the years, but it's still there. The camaraderie is still there.
Yeah. There's been a fair bit of, there's innovations trying to happen, I guess, to reduce the physicality and whether that's, I mean, obviously the back brace, whatever you call the, I can't remember what you call the things or springs on them anyway. Like they're pretty much pretty standard these days. And I guess there's things like, I know AWI are working on sort of other things to support the body while shearing, and then obviously different ways of getting the sheep to the shear and that sort of stuff. What are your predictions as to what's going to happen in shearing?
Well, I don't think you'll get rid of the shearer in any quick hurry. One thing that I've spent a fair bit of money and stuff with is shearing shed design, and I quite like the concept of the race delivery system. So there's a shed down at South Gardner, Jared King shed, that's been set up with the race delivery system. And I went down there when they had the field day down there last year before. And I think it's a great concept. You know, if anyone's wanted to build a shearing shed nowadays, I wouldn't even bother putting a catching pin in. I think the race delivery system takes all that stress off the shearer's body, whether the sheep go one way or the other, it's not really there. I think it's just the fact that you don't have to drag sheep and And they were shearing big sheep down there that day. And a guy that had shorn for me for many years was shearing there. And I just talked to him and he said, you know, you don't go home tired at night. You just drop the sheep down. Because like you said to me earlier, you know, you're dragging a 90 kilo ewe out and someone that's going to shear 200 a day dragging 90 kilos every time. If he can just drop it out. And the other thing with the race delivery setup is that the concept of the let out chute, where instead of it being around on a parallel with the board, it's out on an angle so that when you finish the sheet, it's front feet are down that chute and it walks away. Because a lot of the old sheds we go to, and it's a big chute, a lot of the sheds we go to, the chutes are narrow, the sheep are too big for them, and there's a lip or something there that sheep, and you've got to push every sheep down. That's where a lot of injuries come from. And I've seen that over the years, and I think the race delivery system is such a great concept. And I think over east they found through the floods and all that where they couldn't get sheep to shearing sheds, they came in there with portable race delivery platforms and they lined them up in the shed and they were running six and seven stands in a line and just pumping sheep through just in a big shed. And I think, yeah, that way is just the way of the future. As far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't build a shed. I wouldn't recommend anyone build a shed with catching things.
Yeah, really good point. I think if you do the maths, like a good shearer could be out there, could be dragging 20 ton a day. Like it's a lot of sheep to shift out of a catching pen. Like it's
yeah, and they talked about productivity 10% more. You know, as far as throughput, because they didn't spend that time dragging. But the guys weren't rushing. They just kicked the sheep out and away they go, stand up and stretch and back again. So, very good concept.
And I won't pretend I know what I'm talking about, but a good shearer does, well, they make it look easy anyway. The actual shearing process is less physically demanding than that drag. And particularly if every sheep has to get caught and dragged and then pushed through an inappropriate porthole, there's a whole heap of work that doesn't need to happen.
Interesting. I won't mention any names, but I know a contractor that operates not far out of Perth, and he's getting on a bit, and his knees were buggered, and there was a bloke went along there, and he thought he was racing for the day, and this bloke said, you know, the other guy could shear him that quick, that he was taking all his time getting him out of the pen and down the hole, and he was catching him every time he was shearing him that quick, and so, you know, blokes like that. Just totally change the situation.
For sure. No, excellent. So as a business these days, you're finding plenty of staff, and apart from shed ends, is now the new challenge, you reckon?
It has been. Personally, I've had too many shed ends this year. And all good, mostly really good experience shed ends. Had a little bit of trouble trying to find a wool presser. But, you know, we're running three teams. I was grizzling one day to someone, I was a shearer or so short, and they said to me, oh, I don't know what you're grizzling about. You've got three teams going here and you're managing to staff them pretty well apart from the odd day. But, yeah, this year I found staff pretty good.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty traditional in that I maintain shearing quarters and I always have a cook on as well where, you know, so people don't have to try and find accommodation. That's up to me. To try and find their accommodation. So that's something I've always done and, you know, I felt it pays off in the end because you can get people, they'll come, and if you all they got to do is get out of bed in the morning, walk into the kitchen and eat breakfast and then hop on the bus, and then they come home at night, they just got to hop off the bus and have a feed. And I think it makes it a lot easier. And also nutrition for the people that are working for you, that, you know they're actually getting a feed. They're not living on 2-minute noodles or whatever out of the local shop.
So
that helps us out in a fair few ways. And with that, we also seem to get a few learners. So we're always running at least one learner in every team. And if people say, how come you can always find a learner? Well, because they don't want to look after themselves, most of those guys. You know, they've got enough to do with trying to work out how to shear sheep and stuff like that. So. Yeah, looking after them is a big point, and that's something I really emphasise.
Yeah, awesome. And, 100% right. It's the same as a farmer putting a great shearing shed in front of you, and but you putting great facilities in front of your staff. It's definitely the way to maintain staff and get staff is by having a reputation for looking after them. So that all makes sense.
And over the years, you know, we've just worked with all our growers and just made our facilities as best we can.
Yeah.
It hadn't been hard, you know, it's just a matter of, like I said before, it's a matter of communication with your grower.
Yeah.
And speak to them civilly that, you know, they will do things and it's only a matter of asking them. You know, a couple of years ago, we were shearing at a shed just south of town. We shear there the first week of January every year. And I got some water coolers and I took a water cooler out there and put it in the shed, and the farmer thought it was really good. So after shearing and he'd sold his wool, he rang me and he said, "Oh, Darren, I really like the idea of your water cooler in the shed." And he said, we had a good wool clip this year and we earned a bit of extra money above budget and we've done really well. And he said, "I think I would like to spend some money in the shed and I'll buy a water cooler and put it in there permanently." And anyway, I said, "Yeah, no, that's a good idea." And I was telling my wife and she said, "Why don't you go back to him and tell him that if he got a bit extra money, perhaps he should spend the money and put some Evo shearing heads in there and take the shaft drive down." Anyway, so I rang him back and had a good chat with him. And I said, "You know, you said you had a good wool clip this year and you made that extra money. How about you spend some and take your shaft drive down and put your Evos up?" And I'm pretty sure in the Safe Sheds book there's a picture of four brand new Evos hanging up in the shed. And that's the way it goes, you know. It's a matter of talking to them and I think probably well over 90% of our sheds, probably more than that, have all got Evos in them. Another shed I took the farmer in to get an Evos and I was standing there the next year and that was a shaft drive. And I think the picture of that one's in the book too. And I stand at the back of the shed with the farmer's father and he's shaking his head. And I said, "What's wrong, Jim?" And he goes, "It's a travesty, Darren." He goes, "That shaft drive has been there for so long and it was beautiful shaft drive and you've talked us into changing it and putting these Evos up." He says, "I don't like it." I said, "Well, Jim, let's just turn around and look out the door. See that old 9G tractor over there? You're not putting your crop in with that anymore, and I know it still runs and runs really well." And he just looked at me and he goes, "I guess you got a point."
Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
a lot of farmers don't like change, but, you know, we all got to move on somewhere, and if we can make our conditions in our sheds better for our staff, it's going to make it a lot easier to retain staff and keep staff in the industry.
Yeah, and WA is probably the biggest difference between investment in sheep infrastructure versus cropping infrastructure. So there'll be lots of people with several millions of dollars worth of gear in a shed next door to the shearing shed that, and then the old shaft drive that's been there for 100 years. So there'll be that's never wasted on me.
No. But the other thing there with that is that, you know, I could put up a $200,000 or $300,000 shed to put some hay in, and it's a total tax deduction write off. But shearing shed is not.
Yeah, right. What about if you put a hay shed with a little bit of Evo on the side would be the go.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's one of the anomalies of it. A hay shed or a fodder shed, you can totally write it off straight away.
Yeah, right. Just in terms of just to send that Evo message home properly, in terms of safety for your people on the ground, what does it mean shearing with an Evo versus shearing with a shaft drive if something does go wrong?
If you've got an Evo, you know, it's got the anti-lockup system in it, and should it fail, it's only a matter of a call to Heiniger and they'll sort that up. But the other thing with the Evos is the noise difference. So, you know, you can pull up at a shearing shed and everyone will be shearing, and if the stereo's not blasting the walls off.
I was going to say, you better hear the stereo from the town next door.
If the stereo's not blasting the walls off, you won't hear the machines working.
Yeah.
Because of the quietness of them. So straight away, you take all that noise problem away from a shearer's right ear. So looking down the track, you're not going to be stuck with a claim against you for deafness on that right ear. The other thing with them is the smoothness of the drive. So with the old listers and the sunbeams and stuff, you've got hooks and eyes and all that sort of stuff. I know the later sunbeams and listers are chains to screw together, but you don't have the rattle in it. So an Evo down tube is so smooth compared to all those others. So yeah, so that you don't then get the wrist and that and the tennis elbow injuries from an Evo. And if you have to lift them down or something, I don't know how many workers' comp claims I've had from people lifting down an old shearing plant.
That's a good lift.
It's only a few kilos and you can toss them around pretty easy. So, you know, that's, you know, with Heiniger, we're doing that and the safety of, you know, the wool presses and stuff with the doors. There wouldn't be too many sheds in WA that are not TPW sheds or Heiniger sheds,
yeah.
You know, with the door. A lot of presses complain about the door and it's slower, but it's not slow. You know, I've pressed enough bales in my life to know the difference. It's just the different technique, you know. At least you can put a wool pack in very easy and you know, you can get them out. The ease of use of a TPW Heiniger, it's much easier than most of them.
Excellent, Dan. That's been a fantastic chat and some great information in there and just, yeah, great to hear the story really and, yeah, awesome to see all the good work happening and, yeah, we're passionate parts of the sheep industry here and so we need the shearing industry to be absolutely prospering. So it's great to hear that all the good work going on to make sure we've got young people coming in and enjoying the industry so we can keep producing the fantastic wool and getting it out to those global customers.
Yeah, no worries. And thank you. You know, part of us getting a lot more younger people into our industry and stuff is the coverage we get through media and all that sort of thing. And here in WA, you know, we work pretty closely with Countrymen and the Farm Weekly and places like that, that we get a lot of coverage and we get a lot of good coverage. And so, you know, it's probably like you say, it's a good story. Someone sees a story and then people want to know more about it. And so we try and work that way that, you know, people hear it and people want to know about it. So, it's good to be able to work with all different types of media to be able to get our story out there and continue, you know, the good stories about a great industry.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And, yeah, congratulations to you and Valerie for all the hard work. And, great to see all that happening. And, all the best over there. And I'm sure it's a nice warm shearing shed that you're off to soon or something. But,
I'm hoping they'll stay at the shed all day. We've been there, one shed anyway. We've been there for about 2 weeks and I'm hoping to clean the job up and they will finish today if they manage to get a full day. So that would be good.
Clean one up. Excellent. Thanks, Darren.
All right. Thanks very much. Thanks for your time.
Cheers, mate. Thanks again to our mates at Heiniger, who are proud world leaders in the manufacturing and supply of professional sheep shearing and clipping equipment. They understand that their customers rely on the quality and performance of their products each and every day. Also, thanks to our friends at MSD Animal Health and Orflex. They offer an extensive livestock product portfolio focused on animal health and management, all backed up by exceptional service. Both of these companies are wonderful supporters of the Australian and New Zealand livestock industries, and we thank them for sponsoring the Head Shepherd podcast.